What's going on, guys? Welcome to the show. We're back. It's Sunday. The Walking Dead has returned, and this episode kicked butt. We can't wait to talk about it with you guys. We're going to break down Time for After with a very special song to kick things off for you. We'll see you in just 1 second here on AfterBuzz TV.
You're tuning into the destination for TV superfan discussion, AfterBuzz TV. And now, let the buzz begin.
Yeah!
I love this song.
I feel so fitting.
There's three of us. You. So I could be Romy, you could be Michelle, and he could be Alan Cumming.
Okay,
that'll work. I'll take that.
Yeah.
Did one of us invent Post-its, or is that a different character in the movie?
It might have been a different
game. Yeah, but
Anyway, that's Romy and the Hellshire School reunion, guys. It's a pop culture reference. It has nothing to do with The Walking Dead. Welcome to the show! Welcome to AfterBuzz TV. We're here. We're here to talk about The Walking Dead. We're almost at the mid-season finale of season 5.
One more episode.
The episode's called Time for After. That song is Time After Time.
You guys see the correlation.
Yeah, there you go.
It's a reference, yes.
So, we're here to talk about The Walking Dead. We've got a panel. It's very full. It's very excited. It's got some really good-looking gentlemen.
Thanks.
Guys, how you doing tonight?
What's up, everybody? I am flattered, and I am also Timothy Michael. You can find me everywhere at I am Timothy Mike. I am Timothy Mike, and I am joined by my fellow handsome gentleman.
Wow, that's a lot. I mean, how do I even go second?
You always say that.
No, I mean, but you have such a great introduction. I just say, hey, what's up, everybody? I am Daryl. I'm excited to be here tonight. Great episode. I really enjoyed it. And you can find me everywhere on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. Hopefully my name is spelled at the bottom because I have a very difficult spelling name.
You do.
Killing with that scarf right now.
Thank you. You know, it's winter here. It's winter. It's LA winter.
It's a little cold. I had to drive with the heat.
I like it. I like the change
of season.
I drove
with the heat on.
Yeah.
For like 10 minutes.
Do you guys have those heated seats? Because I don't.
I do not.
No.
Are you kidding?
No.
Yes. Heated seats?
I rented a car in Hawaii and they had heated seats and I forgot the stupid thing was on the whole time. And I was like, why is my butt so warm right now?
This is digital, man. It's passion. It's all about passion.
It's all about passion, baby.
You guys can find me at Ben Bateman Media, Twitter, Instagram, other shows, things like that. We're going to talk about The Walking Dead right now. So let's get into the episode. I really like this episode. I want you guys to know, just outright, sometimes we complain about these episodes. You won't find me complaining about this one. I really enjoyed this episode.
I mean, listen, I told you guys from the beginning, the first couple episodes at the beginning of the season were a little slow to me. But this one, the last three have been pretty consistent for me. And to me, it's the way it represents the old school of Walking Dead. The build up for the season finale or the mid season finale is going to be pretty great.
Yeah. I feel like every episode we've dissected, we found moments that we liked and that we didn't like. And I felt like in this episode, there were just moments that we could have been like, well, why do they do that? But their motives became so clear in the end that it gave every single character the motivation and the reasoning as to why they were doing what they were doing.
The other thing I noticed in this episode that I really liked, and it was in the scene, and we're going to break down each piece of it, but it was in the scene where Eugene was on the roof and he was about to launch the glider, and they were about to break in with the car.
Yeah.
So you had two simultaneously happening plot lines that intersected at one dramatic moment, and it really built this tension in this very cool way where Rick didn't know that it was happening because he was off somewhere else. Because it feels like so much of the show recently has been like these people in this camp doing this thing to set up. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then these people having their adventure. And eventually they'll connect back up.
Yeah.
But it has this very like disjointed feel. This episode didn't feel that way to me.
No.
And also, I'm not going to lie to you, I get a little bit bored sometimes with the Eugene storyline. But tonight, actually, he had so many one-liners that I literally was writing down so many things that he said that were hilarious, you know? And typical Eugene, but I felt like I actually started to like Eugene a little bit more because of this episode.
It's funny that you would say that because he's kind of despicable by the end of the episode in a lot of ways. Right. But I thought that they made his character a lot more interesting. So the biggest, I think we'll start with Eugene. He's kind of the focal point of the episode. For me, kind of the strongest idea in this episode is that no one is more scared of dying than Eugene.
Yes.
That's clear.
Absolutely.
I think he is the most afraid of death of any character we've ever seen on the entire show.
Yeah.
He is driven to be so self-serving.
Outside of Gabriel kind of at the beginning when they first found him at the church.
He was scared of dying.
Gabriel was scared too.
Yeah, but it's true. I mean, he locked people out of the church and they got
eaten. But he also outgrew that, you guys. I mean, literally been following for a few seasons now. And I just feel like at some point he would outgrow this fear, but he doesn't. And it's just mind-blowing to me how somebody could be. I don't want to say the word selfish because I don't think that any of us would react in a different way if we were in this environment at this time.
Yeah.
But it's just so frustrating to watch.
Yeah, he's a fascinating character that they've actually done a very good job building over time. And as comic book readers, which, by the way, guys, we'll do a quick little comic book spoiler section at the end. I know some of you guys look forward to that. We won't really talk about the comic book during the episode. It's not really what the show is about. But just to be very vague about it, the storyline with him in the comic book was is different, yep. we'll say.
Yep.
And it's just, I wasn't expecting some of the turns we've seen out of his character, which is nice. Yeah. And it makes watching his character a lot more rewarding because they're developing it for me on TV.
Yes.
He is clearly terrified of dying. I also think another thing is he makes a comment in the episode where he says, where is it? He's a very small, I am a small person and I don't stick my neck out for anyone.
Right.
He actually acknowledges that he's a small person. And there's just frequently these things that he does. He's so self-deprecating. He makes so many comments. He just really dislikes himself, clearly.
Yeah.
I think he sort of tries to be strong in moments, but he's obviously a very scared, very small person who will do anything to survive. And even like his conversation with Negan about mutual respect, where he goes to kiss his hand and Negan shakes his hand, he's like clearly the girl that gets bullied in high school that becomes friends with the popular girls by like pushing the kid in the wheelchair.
Yeah.
Like, and everybody laughs.
Wow, that's a hell of a reference. Yeah. I feel you though. I feel you.
But he's like dazzled by Negan.
Yeah.
Even though he's like a psychopath. Terrified. I think he's dazzled by him. I think he kind of loves the idea that Negan would think he's smart, which is why he's like sort of willing to work hard to stay on the inside.
I agree and I disagree. I also feel like he's so terrified that he's willing to just say and do whatever he needs to do to transform himself into what Negan feels is the right person.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. And I also feel like he's made to feel so inferior his entire life that anytime somebody makes him feel more important than how he actually feels or actually is, that's what he is attracted to. He likes to feel important. That's exactly why he lied about having a cure. He wants people to know that he's important, that he knows something that nobody else does. So when Negan comes around and he gives him all this, you know, praise for being so smart, your brain, this squishy organ between your mullet, it's like all these lines that he's saying to him, just praising how smart he is. I think that that's what really turns, you know, Eugene on.
What really cranks his shaft, so to speak.
Cranks his shaft, I mean, he had so many. I mean,
he had a lot of good one-liners.
The Cloak and Daggers on the QT, that was one of my favorites, too. You know, it was a lot. It was a lot. Good job, Eugene.
He was killer. Have I told you guys that I've played basketball with him before?
Really?
He, at one of the gyms in Santa Monica, like, I used to go, I don't really shoot much anymore, but I used to go for like a year or two, I would go warm up, like before lifting weights. Mm-hmm. I would just like shoot around.
Yeah.
And he would work out at the same gym. And so a bunch of times, this one like stretch, he must have been in town or something.
Yeah.
I'd be in there and it was just incidentally like two or three different times he would come in and just be like shooting free throws. And like several times, it was just like me and Josh McDermott in the gym, like shooting baskets.
While he was on The Walking Dead?
Yeah, it's like 3 years ago. We didn't talk. I think like at one point he got my rebound and I was like, thanks, man.
Yeah.
But that was it, yeah.
He's a really nice guy. We interviewed him on The Walking Dead like maybe 2 years ago.
Yeah.
And it's actually really nice to see how his character has, you know, they've changed the storylines for him and really developed. Because I remember when we interviewed him, he had blonde hair. So clearly, he didn't realize how much he was going to be a part of this show, you know, at the time. So
yeah, he's a fan favorite. They definitely brought him back and they've done a good job with his character. So the episode opens with him having this conversation with Dwight. So as much as I enjoyed the episode and as much as I liked Eugene's arc in the episode, there was still stuff in here that I found kind of confusing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I thought it was really confusing that he would confront Dwight in the way that he did to start the episode and think that that was a smart move. In my mind, I was like, he must be playing the long game. There must be a play here where he thinks Dwight's going to rat him out or do something, or Negan knows or someone knows that he's doing this, mm-hmm. and they're trying to get information somehow. But it just didn't make any sense to me that he would tell Dwight he knows, but then say something as naive as, if you don't continue your incredibly dangerous plan that you obviously have risked everything to become a part of,
mm-hmm.
I'll keep this to myself. That seems totally unrealistic.
I mean, you could look at it as a cocky move. Like, he's so confident that Negan will protect him that he can just go up to Dwight and be like, hey, you need to stop this. But you could also look at it as a, you know, Eugene ultimately just wants to save people and he doesn't want to hurt anybody. So if he rats out Dwight, he knows what will happen to Dwight. And he doesn't want anybody to die. We've clearly saw this throughout the episode.
Right.
So I just feel like I understood why he did what he did, and that's why I said in the beginning of the episode, people, you could question these motivations with these characters, but then it was kind of revealed as to why they did what they did.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think that Eugene, honestly, he lives in such fear, like kind of what you were saying earlier, and I think that he knows that, you know, at the end of the day, whatever he does is still, what Dwight has done is way worse. So.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, when Negan is going to look at something, if he finds out about Dwight, that's like his carrot, you know? It's like, it's his nugget card, you know? So he knows that he can say whatever to Dwight, and in the end, if Dwight's going to be scared because he doesn't want Negan to find out what he's been doing, you know, or what he did.
Totally. Yeah, I guess I just think Eugene seems so tactical. He doesn't like seem like he's brave. He just seems like he thinks about each version of the scenario.
Yes.
And there had to have been a version of that scenario that he thought of that got him in a lot of trouble.
But he still did it.
Yeah, yeah. Which was very surprising. Again, at the end, because the whole episode he's struggling with this idea that he wants to be a good person, he wants to save people, but he also wants to save himself.
Right.
He does make a comment at one point when talking to Dwight that these people were just traveling companions. They weren't his friends. He's willing to, like, watch them die.
Yeah.
And I just, you know, he's kind of a piece of crap to Gabriel, who's sitting there dying.
Oh, yeah.
I don't really get Eugene. I thought I understood his character a lot, and I think they've done a good job of confusing me.
Yeah. I am not confused by Eugene. I constantly have hope for his character. I constantly have hope that he's going to realize that he is on the wrong side. I constantly have hope that he's going to realize that these are his actual friends. They're not just his traveling companions. That line pissed me off because I was like, are you serious? Like, you, like, just forget Rick and forget Tara and forget all those other groups. Like, we're talking about Rosita here. Abraham is dead. You've literally been with Rosita since pretty much the beginning. So how could you simply just say that she's just a traveling companion? Like, if you're going to fight for anybody, fight for her. Because she's literally been not only somebody that you've been sexually attracted to, if not, you know, mutually attracted
for
to,
sure.
then somebody that you've grown, you know, a bond with that, you know, protected you, you protected her. I mean, they have history. So to him, for him to just throw it away to the wayside just pisses me off. I didn't like it.
Well, also, I think with Eugene, you know, it's really interesting to see how he plays kind of both sides. But at the end of the day, it's a very unique idea that he thinks that he can do everything by himself. Because at the end of the day, you're in a zombie apocalypse. You cannot do anything by yourself.
Yeah, totally.
And he is not a warrior. You know what I mean?
Right.
So for him to even think that... to me, his strategy is a little bit weak, to be honest with you, you know?
Yeah. Well, so he has that conversation with Dwight where he refers to them as just his traveling companions. But that's when he's got a gun to his head, correct?
Yeah.
It's up on the roof when he's about to launch the kite.
Yep.
Which I was really glad that Dwight, like, had the wherewithal to shoot the kite. Because there was a quick second there where we were all looking at each other just like, come on, man.
Right.
Use your brain here.
Right.
Like, don't do the TV thing where everybody's just like, why didn't you shoot the kite?
Right. But then my question was, would the kite have been loud enough to really steer that loud, you know, amount of zombie walkers, you know, away? Because the herd alone, you hear them, you know what I mean? Like, they're loud within themselves, and that little iTunes didn't seem to be that loud to me.
It looked like one of those Christmas gifts that you get that's, like, clearly a knockoff brand.
Right.
It doesn't fly very well. The sound's not nearly as loud as it was in the commercial. And it's, like, wobbling around.
Yeah.
And it's really tinny. And you're like, oh, this is pretty cool.
Yeah.
I'll enjoy this. And you fly it three times, and then it breaks.
And I hope I really wanted them to show him recharging it, because I can't believe that thing.
Yeah,
I'm
with you on that.
That Sasha literally died, like, 8 episodes ago. Exaggeration, guys. And literally,
like,
left it in the
car.
Right. But, like, left it. Right. Because my iPhone literally lasts a couple of days. No. Oh, never. Like,
those
this is like an old iPod.
We're very thick.
Okay, fine, Ben. Maybe it did last
batteries.
A couple of days. But I mean, I hope that he recharged it. I think it was a little unbelievable that it still had battery after all this time.
It was also factually absurd that the thing would have been anywhere near loud enough to actually, like, it was in the air. Sound doesn't travel down.
Down, right. That's why I had a problem with it. But
from a speaker on top. Yeah. I mean, whatever.
No. But I'm glad that Dwight
shot it. It's all that matters.
I'm glad that he shot it. That's all that matters.
So when he says that to Dwight, though, about these are just my traveling companions, my question is, how much of that is Eugene convincing himself, trying to talk himself? Because then he immediately afterwards, when everything goes wrong and he runs to Gabriel's room and he has the same moment, but even more aggressive talking to him and saying, I think actually we should probably pivot to that for a second.
Okay.
Yeah.
His first conversation with Gabriel.
Yeah.
Because there's one really important interaction in that conversation, in my
opinion.
It is.
Yeah.
It's when, and they get to the conversation of faith.
Mm-hmm.
And Gabriel's kind of saying to him, listen, man, I don't need you to be my friend. I need you to believe that there's God has a greater power and he has an idea, a plan for you.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I have to believe somewhere in there's some part of you that wants to do that, feels compelled to do that. And Eugene's like, that's absurd.
Yeah.
And he says, well, you're a man of science. Prior to this, wouldn't you believe that the dead walking was impossible? And then there was a really nice moment with these, like, kind of synthy strings playing in the background,
mm-hmm.
which Bear McCreary, the composer on the show, does pretty sparingly.
Great. Great job.
But when he does use those, he
very
uses,
subtle too.
Yeah, he'll use them just occasionally. They're very like kind of electronic sounding strings. They do a really good job of communicating that moment. That was like, I thought that was a great moment.
Yeah,
I really felt it. And you see Eugene, and then he sees the paint on his finger, which I think is the dried paint from the chess piece, right?
Chess piece. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's sort of suggesting that he's considering all the options. Yeah. So my question is, there is no one in the world that is happy with themselves that would chug wine like that.
No.
I'm going to say no, especially to induce vomiting at the same time.
I don't know about you guys. I've once or twice in my life tried to mainline red wine like that. Like, it's all there was. It was a party. Bad. You're like, somebody's like, drink. Yeah. It never ends well.
No.
It turns bad. It turns bad very quickly.
It's probably the worst thing to chug like that.
Yeah.
I agree.
I think the one thing that I loved about the Eugene and the Father Gabriel interaction was that I had hope for once that Father Gabriel would actually serve an actual purpose, which was to kind of change Eugene's mind or kind of make him second think the path that he's going down.
Yeah.
And I still feel like that is the case. I still feel like they're keeping Father Gabriel around because of that specific purpose. Because if we see it with him with the red wine, I feel like Eugene is trying to convince himself that he is doing the right thing, but ultimately he doesn't believe that.
Yeah, and I think that Father Gabriel sees that. I mean, the entire time he's like, I want you to do the right thing. He just kept reiterating that fact to him. Now their interaction, once again, I have to throw in the Eugene lines. One of my favorites is when, you know, basically Gabriel was telling Eugene, you look like shit, but you look like me. And Eugene goes, oh, well, I don't appreciate that because that you look like a potato and shit casserole.
Yeah, strong.
Like, that's the real stuff right there.
Yeah. There was also another Eugene moment, by the way, later on when he's talking about, he's like, I'm 5 for 5, 10 for 10. And he's like,
I'm saying 20 for 20.
Yeah. And he throws the line about, I've spun my D20 and it did not come up death. Do you guys know what that's a reference to?
No.
No.
A D20 is a 20-sided die that's used in Dungeons & Dragons.
Oh.
Okay.
So when you roll a 20, it's called critting, and I think a zero. I've played probably Dungeons & Dragons when I was a kid, but mostly I play a different card game that uses 20-sided dice.
Yeah.
But a D20 is a very common term in my world. I thought it was hilarious that like the writers were like, well, of course Eugene would
know that.
He would use the phrase D20. That would be like fully in his vocabulary, and he would use it like somebody else would know what the hell he was talking about.
Yeah. The writers for Eugene are just, I mean, the writing, not the writers, the writing, because it's not separate writers for each character. The writing for Eugene's character is just insane. Like the way that they and also the actor's just dialect of the way that he delivers these lines, it's just on point. Like I don't think I would believe it from anybody else.
Yeah, the most Hollywood thing in the world would actually be if Josh Redhorn had like a really thick British accent, and was like super short hair, suave, handsome, dressed like super sharp in real life. But that's not the case.
That's not the case.
He's great and he does such a good job with it. But I also think that if you get a job writing for The Walking Dead, you're probably a dork. I would guess. I would think you probably...
I wouldn't say dork.
I don't know if I would use the word dork.
Yeah.
I might say...
you spent a lot of time in your bedroom.
You may have had an introverted moment in your life.
I use the phrase dork.
Let's say that.
I use the phrase dork lovingly. Like, I'm fully a dork. Like,
I
think I mean more of like your interests. If you're writing for a zombie show that's based on a comic book and Robert Kirkman probably has something to do with you, probably you are pretty aware of... the finer points of the dork, nerd, geek lifestyle.
That's true. Yes. That might be true. Yes. I mean, listen, I'm a dork, so hey, I'll take that.
Would just be my guess.
Yeah.
All right, so I think that's... Well, before we move on, actually, the last thing I just want to ask you guys quickly. In that conversation of faith, faith, purpose, absurdity, all of that stuff, where do you kind of think, like, where do you think Eugene stands on that? What do you think he thinks about? Do you think he's considering it?
I think that Eugene actually has an internal battle with himself, and I think that he, once again, he's just so scared that he's making all his decisions based on that fear. Mm-hmm. And so that blocks a lot of things that are good in him, because at the end of the day, he's like, let me just, if everything's going right, let me go right, because that's the way it should go. You know, he's not almost thinking for himself in a lot of ways, because he's thinking based on fear.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I agree with you. I think that there is definitely an inner battle. I think that's the perfect way to describe what Eugene is going through right now. And that's exactly what they portrayed in this episode, which is why I loved it so much. Because we look at him and we want to say that he's a coward. We want to say that he's like this terrible person for, you know, trading on his friends. But if we were in that situation, wouldn't we do the same thing to survive? Wouldn't we want to, you know, get as far ahead or as much as we can into the zombie apocalypse without dying? Like, I don't know. I like his character. I just want a turning point. I need him to just go back to his roots and with his friends.
But here's the thing, though. I hear what you're saying. But if I was looking at two different camps, I'm looking at Rick's camp. I'm looking at Negan's camp. I still honestly would go with Rick's camp because at the end of the day, for me, Negan is too unpredictable.
Yeah.
And you never know what's going to piss him off. And you can be great in his eyes at one moment, and then in another moment, he can flip it on you. Where Rick and the team is consistent.
Yes.
And Eugene's been able to experience that. They fucking saved his life.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
So I think, you know, when I look at him, sometimes my respect gets lost with him because I feel like he's making the wrong choice.
No, I completely agree with you. And I just want to bring it back to the Eugene and Negan conversation when they were having that conversation. He like shook his hand. He said, I have a mutual respect for you. And I'm like, it doesn't make sense, especially for Eugene to believe that because he's such a smart person.
Right.
Yeah.
Because you're literally standing there with a bat and you literally have the scare tactic in your hands in order for Eugene to make him do something.
You were
going to
kiss his hand.
Right. You know? And so you're sitting there saying, I have a mutual respect for you. And Eugene actually believes that, which I think once again, just feeds into his inner battle. Like, hey, I'm smart enough to believe that you seriously don't have this respect for me.
Haven't you guys ever like had the moment where your ego tells you what you want to hear, even though it's totally unbelievable?
Yes.
No matter how smart you are, no matter how much you are just like, this is too good to be true.
Yeah.
There's no way that this company just like calls you out of the blue and is like, here's $9,000 for a day's modeling gig. We found you on this on
is
your
is this the day in the life of Ben right
Facebook.
Now?
Right.
Like, oh, this, oh okay. You don't get out of bed for $50,000? Is that what it is?
No, then? I just mean like there's a lot of scams out there that play to your ego.
Yes.
And we live in LA, so I use that example because we're all in entertainment.
Yes.
But I guess my point is like, he may know about himself that he's not someone who probably would deserve the mutual respect of somebody who commands this entire group of people. Right. And he hasn't done enough to really show that. But he wants to be respected. He wants that brilliance to be, even though if he doesn't have it.
Yes.
And so I think that's why he does that. Even though he's too smart to know, I think he forgets it on purpose.
No, I agree with you. And I just have to point out that Rick showed him a very fair amount of respect as well.
Yeah.
Rick never questioned or undermined him in any kind of way. I felt like when he was with Rick's group, they showed him what respect really looks like. And for him to believe what Negan is saying to him, I don't think that his character actually does, and that's why he's having this inner battle.
Well, I mean, yeah, there is definitely a lot of history for him to draw on to think about that in this
time. Sure.
And speaking of history, I want to talk to you guys really quickly about Vikings. It's coming back. Season 5 returns very soon. Have you guys watched this show?
I think it's a great show.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I'm obviously a huge Game of Thrones show fan, but this show is very much like in tune with that and gets
this,
a lot of excitement.
Yes. I know a number of people that watch this show. Season 5 is going to be very exciting. Jonathan Rhys-Meyers joins the cast. The whole theme of this season is going to be who will rise. So what was that, a cow?
I have no idea what that was.
Yeah. it's already back. Just like I said, Jonathan Rhys-Meyers, a very, very fine actor, joins the 10-episode season 5. And I know Ben Robson's in this show. I'm a big fan of him. And I've just heard crazy stories about the violence and the amount of money that is spent to make the show look on par with those shows, like your Game of Thrones and your American Gods, these big marquee shows. I've heard they've just doubled down. So, pay attention. It is back. There was a two-hour season premiere on November 29th. So check out season 5 of Vikings around on history right now.
I actually started binge watching it. It's really good.
Awesome.
Do you feel like Vikings for history is what like The Walking Dead is for AMC?
I would agree. Yeah.
It's a big
right?
show. For
Absolutely.
Yeah,
I totally would agree. Yeah.
They put a lot of money, a lot of time. I mean, you don't get Jonathan Rhys-Meyers. That guy, I'm pretty sure that guy's been nominated for an Oscar.
Okay.
So anyway,
I
could be wrong.
Yeah,
but he's been in a lot of good
movies. I was trying to think. Yeah, yes.
All right. So let's continue talking Walking Dead, guys. We only have a few minutes left to cover a lot of episodes. So let's talk about the Rick storyline briefly.
Mm-hmm.
This did have my favorite moment in the entire episode. You guys saw me.
I know what it is.
Well, it's because like, all right. So Rick, he gets taken out of the locker, and there's just like more of like the really like dark, weird humor that's played with him and Jadis.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Where she's like, turn.
As she's taking a picture of him.
There's like a guy sketching him.
She's like throwing the light bulbs off
yeah.
as she's like taking the pictures of him. Yeah.
It's excellent. And Rick's just like, he's like turning. He's a piece of meat. He's
yeah,
just rotating
exactly.
in his container there. And then he gets brought back out and he has to fight the like zombie with the thing on its head again.
Yeah. I honestly don't
very
think
gladiator.
It was I don't think it was a fight. I think that they were going to kill him.
Yeah.
Because he was holding him down. It wasn't a fight.
I wanted Rick to like, because what I would have said if I was Rick in that position, I would have been like, come on, with this thing again? Are you serious? I already killed one of these things.
They like, I guess that's the salvagers thing. They like to make people,
yeah.
you know, fight with covered
Yeah,
zombies.
I also love that before the pictures were being taken, Rick had a Luke talking to Jabba moment, mm-hmm. right? Where he's like, you know, he's like, join us, Jabba, or die. Yeah. This is your final warning.
Yeah.
And then I was thinking, like, in that moment, that's when he needed, like, R2-D2 to flip out.
Just
the,
come out there, yeah.
Yeah, the lightsaber.
I just love that he was talking trash the entire time. You know what I mean? He literally did not let down, you know. He's like, it's not too late for you.
Yeah, his cocky attitude.
He's like, join us or die. Yeah. That was my favorite line from Rick. Join us or motherfucking die.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
It's I'm locked in a locker with my underwear on.
With my underwear and my arms are taped together. Yeah.
So here's my question. All right, well, first of all, my favorite moment in the episode is the fact that you see Rick maneuvering this pole and taking fools down, and you know, I was like, I know he's going to tear this guy's head off. Now, I wanted him to weld it as a weapon with the head on it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's what I was expecting was going to happen. I was sure it was going to happen, but I didn't get that.
I don't think that he wanted to actually kill them. If he wanted to kill them, he could have done that. I think he really wanted them to join him, and in killing one of them, then they would have been like, no, you just killed one of our people. Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, I feel like he just wanted them ultimately to join his cause, join the war, and so he couldn't have done that. But I agree with you. I wanted him to do it, too.
What I felt was missing from the scene, and maybe this exists online somewhere, is a super dramatic shot of Rick in his underwear holding the staff with the zombie head on it.
That'd have been nice.
Like, as a wallpaper on your phone.
Oh. Yeah.
How epic would that be?
Yeah, that'd be pretty epic. Yeah.
There's probably a picture out there.
I'm sure it is. Yeah.
I would have to hope so.
Yeah.
So that's a great moment. So then Rick is like, I'm walking out of here.
He's like, I'm leaving. Sculpt whatever shit you want.
Yeah.
Well, Daryl said it during the episode, and you know, Jadis was so turned on when he had her like pinned down on the ground.
Yeah. She was thinking some sexual things.
Do you think that's the reason that she didn't have him killed in that moment?
Absolutely.
That's my one thing. Is like, I feel like if I was one of the salvagers, and I had a gun on Rick in that moment, I wouldn't have even waited for her hand. I would have just shot Rick and saved her. Like, but maybe he's such a precious asset, and they all know how precious he is, that they wouldn't act on it without her command.
I agree. I think what's interesting about Jadis is, as much as Rick gets on her nerves, she knows how powerful he is and how much of an asset he could be. And I feel like she, once again, is just turned on by him. So I feel like she hindsightedly knew that he was going to get out of the situation. She just wanted to see how.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, look, the man got out of, you know, being killed when his arms are taped together and he doesn't have any weapons. He's in his underwear, his boxers.
Yeah.
And he was able to flip that. So, you know, she's got to respect him a little bit for that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it is what it is. Yeah. You know, he showed how much power he really has.
Yeah. Totally. All right. So I think that's pretty much the scene, right? Like, the only other thing to talk about there is how the scene ends.
Yeah.
When they get out and Rick climbs the tower with the sniper. But we should talk about what happens to get to that point first.
Yeah.
Lot of Daryl's going to die weirdness
in this
episode.
That's what they're saying in the chat, too.
You guys, I didn't get that at all in this episode.
Really?
No.
I got that. I got that. I said before, you know, when we were watching, I said the only thing is that I feel like they wouldn't take him out so quickly right now, because I feel like we haven't seen a lot of Daryl so much this season.
Yeah.
Strong storyline, you know, with him only. Yeah. So I feel at this stage they would need to develop more of a storyline with him before they just take him out.
Yeah, no, I remember you guys saying that during the episode when we were watching it. And I just remember thinking, like, no, they can't take him out right now because there's this whole confrontation between him and Dwight that needs to happen.
Yeah, I mean, that probably happens next episode, is my guess. It was definitely, there was definitely a deliberate conversation in the car between Michonne and Daryl. Mm-hmm. And Michonne is the closest thing to an extension of Rick that we have.
Yeah.
Like, Maggie is the other one who would be the closest, but, like, in terms of ideology, you got to assume Michonne and Rick are on the same page.
Yeah.
And there was a moment where she says, it's not worth us, and Daryl said, it is to me. And what that really means is, it's not worth dying to do what you want to do. And Daryl said, my life's not worth what you think it is. I'm willing to die if it does this.
It was very melancholy, for sure.
Yeah, and I understood that. I just didn't get, like, death. I just didn't get, like, he was going to die from it. I don't know.
He's suggesting that at that point in time, he's making decisions and his life doesn't matter to him anymore. Because, like, everybody else in that situation, I guess not everyone. That's true, because, like, Tara and Morgan were both on board, too.
That's what I mean. Like, I feel like if Tara and Morgan weren't on board, then I can see, like, this, like, whole, like, Daryl might die thing. But I feel like they were so careful about planning it and what was going to happen. And I feel like if they had any kind of doubt that Daryl might end up dead at the end of it, then they wouldn't have done it. I feel like Tara would have been like, no, this is too risky. Or Morgan would have been like, no, this is too risky. Because Daryl and Tara are pretty close.
Yeah.
So I feel like if any kind of risk was involved, Tara would have been like, no, let's not do this.
Yeah.
But that never happened. That never occurred. They were pretty confident, and I was like, they're good. They're fine.
Yeah. It was definitely interesting. So it all hell breaks loose. They line up their snipers. Rosita and Michonne both walk away. Now, the Michonne walk away was pretty straightforward. Mm-hmm. It was, you know, I wanted to see this thing through, so on and so forth. I don't know that there's that much to say about that. The Rosita one was a lot more interesting. Mm-hmm. She's been a really obnoxious character for a long time in a lot of ways, to me.
Yeah,
she,
I know.
She was really, well, for like two seasons almost, she was very one-dimensional. They didn't really give her a lot. She played this one beat over and over and over again. Mm-hmm. What I was thinking about was she says it took seeing Sasha step out of that coffin to change my mind. Mm-hmm. But don't you think that living in this world and seeing so many people you know die... Mm-hmm. How could it really take Sasha specifically? And that because she was trying to do the same thing? Is that why?
Well, because I feel like, and this is one of my favorite moments of the episode, because as we have established, I really do enjoy Rosita's character. And I feel like after watching Abraham die, she just had this eye for vengeance. She had this blind rage for vengeance, and that's all she wanted. And she has made so many decisions to get so many people into trouble because of that blind vengeance. And I think that seeing Sasha in that moment was like the straw that broke the camel's back. I feel like she feels guilty. She feels responsible for what happened to Sasha because they both obviously decided to do what they did and go to the compound. And obviously Sasha got, you know, held hostage and killed or whatever. But I feel like that was her turning point. And I love this moment because you say that, you know, Rosita's so one-dimensional. She's only played this one dimension for like two seasons. But we see this other side of her in this. And it's like she's not blinded by rage anymore. She actually has... you know, this hindsight, and she has faith in Rick and she has faith in the plan, and that's all she wants to do. She just wants peace at the end of it, and if she has faith in what Rick's plan is to ultimately maintain that peace or obtain that peace, then that's what she's going to go with. And I loved that moment.
Well, she has the line. She says, I believe in Rick Grimes. Yeah. That was a really important line.
Yeah.
And, well, it's a lot of chat going back and forth about Rosita's character. Some people don't think that her reasoning was believable. That's what Fluffy Barrington, sorry if I'm pronouncing that wrong, but Fluffy Barrington said, you know, so it's interesting. I think that, I don't know if I understood her reasoning in a sense of why she was saying she didn't want to go through with it, in a sense she thought that the plan was not the best plan because of the lack of men that they, you know, men and women that they had to do it. But on the flip side, we just saw her last week blow up a dude with, you know,
a grenade launcher.
Yeah. So it didn't go with what her character was last week.
Yeah. Yeah, it was, it felt a little, it felt a little quick, the turn, to me. That's all. Not that I, like, totally disagreed with it. It just felt like that whole, that moment lining up that plan, Michonne walking away made a little more sense to me.
Yeah.
Like, she's not the kind to be impulsive anyway. Right. Rosita's been so impulsive.
Right. Well, I mean, let's not forget, like, the whole, her blowing up the guy with the grenade launcher was because they were threatening Rick's plan, and that's exactly what Rosita believed in. And they were only going to the sanctuary to see it. They weren't actually going there to take action. They were just going there to see what happened, just to have closure on it, and to make sure that the plan was actually set in place. And after they saw that, Rosita was like, okay, I'm good. I see that Rick's plan is actually working.
Yeah.
And her blowing up the guy with the grenade launcher, I don't think that was, it's such a 180-degree turn. I feel like she did what she had to do in order to maintain Rick's plan, and it just followed in this episode where Daryl, once again, is threatening Rick's plan, and she's like, you know what? No, we have to stick to Rick's plan.
Yeah.
I don't think he was that much of a turn.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So the episode ends with Rick realizing that this whole thing has gone down, which it definitely, it sets up some more conflict, because we've already seen the Daryl and Rick conflict be very specific, and they already got into a fist fight last episode.
Yeah.
So now we're looking at potentially, I mean, this isn't just, I want to do this. This is, I did this. Rick knows the second that he looks at the sanctuary who did it.
Yeah.
So there's a bunch of predictions that I want to get into here. Yeah. There's what's going to happen there. There's, we know Morgan is becoming a Fear the Walking Dead character who's leaving Walking Dead for now. Mm-hmm. So how are they going to exit Morgan? That's another one that I want to know about. Mm-hmm. There's also what's going to happen with Eugene. So I think, why don't we get into predictions and start that conversation?
Yeah.
And now, you're after Buzz TV.
All right, so guys, we're going to do a quick predictions where we talk about the issues in question, and then we will do a one-minute comic book spoiler, and we'll do a sign-off before that so you guys can know where to find us if you want to follow along. So, first up, let's talk Morgan. What's going to happen? How's he going to get out of there?
Oh, gosh. I feel like because Morgan was so on board with Daryl's plan, and because I honestly felt like Daryl's plan was successful, I felt like him doing it, and if it wasn't successful, it would have been really detrimental, because it's like, hey, Rick could say I told you so. But it was successful. I don't know where all the walkers went. I can't believe that all of them went into the compound. We don't exactly know how much time has surpassed the conversation between Rick being like, hey, I will show you all the walkers, to them going to the walkers, or to the sanctuary. Was it a day? Was it a few hours? I can't believe that all the walkers just disappeared.
The majority probably would have gone in there.
Yeah.
Probably.
And if that's the case, then where is everybody in the sanctuary? And if they have gotten out, where do they go? And if they don't have any more weapons, there's just so many questions that I honestly don't, I don't know what I could predict. That preview was very, I don't want to say disjointed, but it was very like flashy. Like, here's a character, here's a character, here's a character. They said that there's a moment that's going to happen at the end of the episode that everybody's going to be talking about. So that only leaves me to believe that somebody's going to die.
Daryl, probably.
You guys keep saying Daryl. I honestly don't believe that Daryl's going to go anywhere.
I think it's going to be Daryl's going to die, or he's going to be exiled by Rick and leave. I think it's one of those two things.
That's interesting. Exiled. I don't think Rick could exile Daryl at this stage. I don't know. I think that we're gonna see Dwight die.
You think Dwight's gonna die next week?
Dwight's gonna die. The funny thing is, the chat thinks that Carl's gonna die.
No, you can't kill Carl.
He's the new leader. He's the next leader.
Right? Chat saying.
I don't think he's truly the next leader. I just think he's the least. He's like the least killable character on the show.
Really?
If you kill Carl, it means that you have a really hard time killing Rick, because then the Grimes family is just gone from the show. And that's been such an important and such like a grounded part of the show.
Yeah.
It would be very difficult for me to imagine them. And I think I don't think that Andrew Lincoln's on the show longer than one, maybe two more seasons most. I'm expecting that season 9 is probably his last season, maybe season 10. And they might cancel the show after 10 seasons. I don't know. That seems less likely, but I think they'll kill Rick.
The chat's all about Carl dying next week.
Yeah, people hate Carl. And they hate him in the comic, they hate him in real life.
Yeah.
So, all right. So then, if that's Morgan, what about what's going to happen with Eugene? What's his plan?
I think, I feel like Father Gabriel is going to get through to Eugene. Like I said, we can't spend all this time on Father Gabriel and he served no purpose at the end of this. I feel like them setting up him being in the trailer with Negan and him being taken back to the sanctuary, I feel like just to interact with Eugene, I feel like he is supposed to be his like vote of his voice of consciousness or his voice of
conscience.
Yeah, thank you, conscience. And I just feel like that's who's going to turn Eugene into, you know, going back to Rick's group.
I think that actually Eugene is going to go back to Rick's group. I think that this is all a setup for us to almost hate him for a second.
Yeah.
But then love him to, you know, when he kind of decides or makes the right decision to realize that he can't do this all alone.
Yeah.
That's what I think is going to happen.
Interesting. I think I'm pretty much on board. I mean, my one question is, what's going to happen with Rick and Daryl? What's that interaction going to look like? Like, what's the... Is it going to be a fight? Is it going to be a... I don't know.
Some people in the chat are saying that they're going to fight and that Rick's going to... You know, that means that Daryl's going to die because there's going to be... Like, Rick's going to kill Daryl. And I don't know if I could... I never could see that.
I can't see that either.
I can't see that.
I'm also interested in seeing what Jadis does after she sees, like, hey, Rick promised you walkers surrounding the sanctuary. Yeah. And then they get there and there's no walkers anymore.
Walkers, right?
I'm excited to see what Jadis is going to do. And I hope that the salvagers in themselves stay along with Rick's group.
Do you hope it involves the sheer apron?
The sheer apron? Oh, of course. Because I need some side boob, like, right now.
But here's my question for you guys. Do you think that if Eugene would decide to have this, you know, holy thou moment and realize that Rick's the team he needs to be with, do you think they would accept him back in? Because he could turn on them at any moment.
That's another thing. I think that Rosita would not accept him back in.
I think several of them wouldn't accept him back in.
Yeah. I'm just talking about Rosita because they have the closest relationship.
Yeah.
And I just feel like... If Rosita won't accept him back in, then nobody else will.
Right, yeah.
All right, let's do a quick sign-off and talk comic book spoilers for just a second. Timothy, where can the folks find you?
Everybody, you can find me at I Am Timothy Mike, I-A-M Timothy Mike.
You can find me at Dario Kristen on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, and also on Friday nights on the Reels channel for several shows, actually. Broken Famous is one of them. So.
Cool. Yeah. You guys can find me at Ben Bateman Media, Twitter, Instagram, Wednesdays on the Popcorn Talk Network doing Action Movie Anatomy, talking the best action movies of all time, and here on AfterBuzz doing Riverdale on Wednesdays. So we're going to do a quick comic book spoiler, guys. For those of you that want to hear about comic books, stay tuned. If you don't, turn off your computer, unplug your headphones, turn off your iPhone, whatever. Get out of here.
Did we get the lights?
Spoiler alert.
We're going to ruin some stuff.
There we go. Thank you, Anthony.
We're going to ruin some stuff for Daryl, and unless you take sick pleasure in seeing that happen, get out of here. Unless you've read the comics.
Yeah.
So, how are you totally caught up?
Yes.
Okay. So,
yes.
I'm like six issues behind. The last book.
No, I'm sorry. Caught up to the actual, like, the last issue? No. I'm caught up throughout the whole war issues.
Okay. Like, I go just past that. Okay. So am I going to spoil some stuff for you right now, then?
I mean, if you do, it's fine, because I'm about to read it anyway. Okay. I mean, I kind of regret bringing up the whole Eugene comic books. I think it was last episode or two episodes ago, because this was such a Eugene-heavy episode. Yeah. And once again, I feel like in the comics, he is such a more of a badass character. Like, he has more of a character dimension in the in the comics. And I'm just waiting for them to explore that on the television show.
Well, so that's the thing I was going to say, is Eugene's character continues to develop. There's some really important developments in the comic book world after the time jump.
Yeah.
That it, Rosita's character, in fact, I don't want to spoil it for you, so I'm gonna let you read it.
Okay.
But talking a little more specifically, Eugene and Rosita and just like sort of their relationship becomes much more front and center.
Yeah.
And, there's also some really, really good Gregory stuff that comes up. So, yeah, I think overall I like the direction we're going. It's interesting to think that we're going to spend another half season on the war. It kind of doesn't feel like we need another half season on the war.
I agree.
Feels like it should end next week and then the time jump should happen.
I agree. That would be awesome if they did the whole time jump at the end of next episode. If they somehow finagled that in, because I feel like that would bring back the viewers, like, okay, finally the war is over, like we have conclusion to that, let's move on.
There could be, I mean, and you could finish telling the story of the war in flashbacks from the future.
I agree.
I don't like the thing is, like, there's a couple really, really intense interactions that I feel like I need to see, but aside from those intense interactions, like, I need to see Rick and Negan face off, and I need to see Dwight and Daryl face off, and that's kind of about it. And I think you could do all of that in 90 minutes next week.
Yeah.
Cap it off with a time jump.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, Negan doesn't die. That's the one spoiler I'll throw in.
Yeah.
I'm all about that.
Yeah. So, anyway, guys, that's going to wrap us up talking comic books. Thanks for listening. Thanks for watching. Thanks for tuning in. Same time, same place. We will be here next week to cover the 90-minute season finale. It's actually the mid-season finale.
And we also have a special raffle that we're going to do for the season finale next week.
I'm glad you brought that up.
Make sure you tune in.
Oh, cool. Yeah. We're giving something away.
We're giving something away.
All right.
Fun stuff.
Bye, guys.
Bye, guys.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV Network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.